Hey, welcome back, everybody. Time again for one of our special OC Spotlights. The one show, the only show that shows you the most incredible people doing the most amazing things. And I think you'll agree on many counts, this is going to be one of those today here. Without further ado, we're privileged to have with us, I got to make sure I get this right, Dave Cafaro. Did I get it right there?
Nailed it, Paul.
I nailed it. Okay, Dave Cafaro. And Dave Cafaro, for anybody that's been in Orange County more than a minute, you will immediately recognize him as the, do we say CEO of the Irvine, the Greater Irvine Chamber of Commerce.
That's it.
Quite a role. And then we're going to talk about his book that he wrote. That's why we came in here today. But so give us a little background on Dave. Where did you come from and how did you end up in Irvine here?
I came from a couple of different backgrounds. So I've spent about a third of my career in consulting. Mm-hmm. Lots of different kinds of businesses. The last few years has been more banks and credit unions.
That we talked about. Don't you working with banks and like how they get more investment accounts opened or all sorts of things?
Yeah. You know, I never intended to work for a bank. I wanted to be a consultant my whole career.
Really?
And so I took an engagement with a bank and it turned into a job. And I said, well, I'll just do this for another year. And then it turned into another year. And then I'll just do this until something exciting happens. And then we would buy a bank. And I loved turnarounds.
Right.
And then something else would happen. And before I knew it, I had spent a lot of time working in banks. But I consider myself a strategist, a consultant at heart. That's what I really get excited about.
And so how did that lead to working with the Chamber of Commerce here? Because the Irvine Chamber is the big chamber in Orange County. What are there, 34 cities? Many chambers, but I don't think any of them on the same scale or scope or impact that the Irvine Chamber has. That's my impression.
There are a lot of terrific chambers in the county, but the thing that I think is interesting about the Greater Irvine Chamber is Irvine is really kind of the commercial hub for the county. We've got every different type of business. We've got early stage startups. We've got mature companies. We've got med tech, clean tech, green tech.
Yeah.
You name it. And there's
car
so
tech.
There's
a bunch of car companies here. Yes. We're talking about my dad's background and from Detroit and worked at Chrysler. And I'm surprised how many Lucid and
Rivian,
all these things around here.
But we've also got eVTOL companies. We've got Supernal that builds eVTOLs, right? The electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicles.
Right.
And it's just really a fascinating place to be. So in my role in the chamber, it's a lot of traditional chamber kinds of things, networking, activities, events, things like that, which are fantastic. But I also have the good fortune of getting involved in helping to highlight industries that are growing, sectors that are growing, and look for opportunities to help them sort of enable, empower, facilitate, accelerate that growth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
You've been on your own entrepreneurial journey. You've helped you've helped others here in the area tell their entrepreneurial journey. Do you work in attracting entrepreneurs there? Is that part of the chamber's job, or is it just to be a cheerleader for all of this stuff? Do you help recruit companies in here?
We do help recruit companies. That's been one of the things that I've really focused on in the 2.5 years that I've worked with the chamber. There are so many reasons to be in Irvine and Orange County, mm-hmm. and sometimes we lose sight of that. A lot of the talk that we hear is about how challenging it is to do business here in California. And
high regulations, high costs, et cetera.
Right. Those are realities. What we focused on is how do we lower the barriers to entry, whether it's somebody who's just coming out of UCI or Concordia or Chapman and they want to start a company, or somebody who's leaving a big company and they want to start their own business,
right?
Or somebody that wants to come here from outside of the area. And the other thing that we're seeing recently is kind of what's called boomerang companies, companies that left. And now they're saying, you know, where we went wasn't exactly what we thought it would be. We want to come back to Orange County.
No, so, you left us. Forget it.
Right. We always say it's a two-way ticket. Come on back. We'd love to have you here.
So, and how long have you been with the chamber now?
2.5 years.
2.5 years.
And
okay.
It's so much fun, Paul. I honestly love every minute of it.
Because I would think no 2 days are alike here.
Absolutely.
You're dealing with governments. You're dealing with quasi-public-private agencies, you're dealing with banks, and you're dealing with entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
So why, then, document? What was the urge to put this on paper and turn it into a book, which you call The Entrepreneur's Journey?
This is my fourth book, and this one is targeted expressly towards people who are either starting a business, they're scaling a business, or they're stuck in their business. Mm. And I've been in all those positions, yeah, right, as a founder of companies. And so what I try to write about in this book and in my other books are principles. Those things that are just consistent no matter what the trends are, those are foundational things. And so in this book, I write about some principles along the journey as an entrepreneur, things that can help wherever somebody is in their journey. That was the real motivating
factor. We'll go through
factor.
Some of your fundamentals and framework here, but I was struck by one of the lines that I read, is that success as an entrepreneur is not an event. It's the result of a disciplined execution of fundamentals. In other words, it's a sequence of events, and it's a structured thing. Too many of us think the entrepreneur is, you just jump in, and then it happens. You raise the money, and you start. We tend to just view it as a singularity, a thing. I quit my job. I opened a company. I raised some money. I started a business. You don't see it that way.
It's not that way. I wish it was. That would be wonderful. But the reality is, that's the kind of the exciting part of it, the glamour part of it. The reality is that those fundamentals, those really basic things done consistently, done well, are part of what differentiate a company that really thrives and succeeds from those that don't.
Yeah.
So great ideas are fantastic, but on their own, that's not a business.
Yeah.
So what I try to extract are some of those things I've gotten from the research, as well as from my own experience in business or as a consultant or even at the chamber, those things that consistently make a difference. I'll give you a couple of examples. One
Please,
of them
yeah.
is this whole idea of knowing your customer deeply. Hmm. Here's what I mean. So there's this great term in the banking business that's called know your customer. It's a regulatory thing, but the principle behind it is translates to any business. The idea is, as a banker, you want to know who you're doing business with, what they do, how they do it, where they do business, so that anything that's out of that normal pattern sends up warning flags. They say, this might be money laundering, or this might be terrorist financing.
Yeah, right.
The way that I apply the principle in the entrepreneur's journey is...
Know your customers so that you can find out if they're criminals or not here.
Yeah. Not quite, no. But it's know who they are, what matters to them, what they value, and what they'll pay for. So I go into more detail about that. But I was very influenced by Peter Drucker. I studied at the Drucker School of Management. And one of his
That's
core principles...
That's up at Chapman or whatever?
It's at Claremont.
Oh, Claremont. I'm sorry. Yeah.
And,
right.
and one of his principles is the purpose of a business is to create a customer. He doesn't talk about maximizing profits. He doesn't talk about shareholder value. His belief is if you understand who the customer is, what they value, what they need, what they'll pay for, those things happen. Those are the outcomes. It's very Zen. Do the customer part of it right by knowing who they are very well, and everything else follows. So I go into a lot of detail about that core principle of knowing your customer. I'll give you some examples of where it hasn't worked. So I worked as a consultant with a client early in my consulting career, right after graduate school. It was a home builder right here in Orange County.
Okay.
They were a medium-sized firm. They had a great business building standard kind of just tracked homes.
Okay.
And they were really good starter homes. That was their focus. Starter homes for people starting their families. That was even kind of like their tagline. They got influenced to go across the border to Nevada and to capitalize on all the people moving to the Henderson area. And they wanted to go into the custom home business. So they said...
Because how much different could it be? A custom home, a tract home. It's all a home. Yeah.
It's a home. So we're good at homes. We should be good at this. What they found was, first of all, custom home buyers are very different than tract home buyers. But then you go through every step of the process of building a custom home. The suppliers are different. The products are different. The timelines are different. The permitting is different. Every single step in the process was different. So they learned that, in fact, it was a very different customer. That's part of what my project with them was to help them uncover that since it's such a different customer, the only thing they have in common with building standard tract homes here in Southern California is that they're homes.
Yeah.
But the customer was completely different. So they had to really shift their model, get back on track to get back to profitability.
So it would seem that once you understand the customer, then you have to have some sort of model or go-to-market process.
Yes. Yeah.
Rather than just let's throw it out and see who buys it.
Yes. So that's another of the principles, having a clearly defined go-to-market model. How are we going to show up for our customer? Are we an online-only business, or are we an in-person-only business? Are we going to distribute through others, or are we going to have our own distribution? All those questions about how you show up in the marketplace are essential for entrepreneurs to think through. All of them have different strategy implications. They all have different economic implications. But that home builder example is a perfect one when it comes to the go-to-market model.
So I'll give you an interesting, you're making me think here. At OC Talk Radio, I get invited to all these talks and events. And I was at a, I think it was like a women's conference recently here. It was on campus at UCI. And I wish I could remember her name because it would make the story more powerful. But she had been the original, I guess she was the PR person. She had her own PR firm, a one-person firm, and she got hired by a young guy named Steve Jobs when he just was starting up a little company called Apple. And she rode it quite far with him, built a big company out of it here. And she talked about it in the beginning. They were just product geeks. This is cool. Look at this. Who'll buy it? I don't know. Somebody will buy it. And they had no clear idea in mind who was going to buy it, nor as they started to see it. And they, in fact, they had wrong ideas of who was going to buy it. And they didn't see the academic world and schools, and they didn't see artists and other people. They thought every small business would want to get one of these things immediately, and nobody did. And she said Jobs almost lost it in the beginning because they did not have the two things you're talking about. They didn't know who was going to buy it. They had a product in search of a customer.
Yeah, yeah. So that is a really common challenge that founders have, is they fall in love with their idea.
Right.
And the challenge is when love is blind, right? When it blinds you to the reality. There's a great story that I learned, and I put it in this book, but about a company called Juicero. And so it was started by this guy who, his family had health problems. Both of his parents passed away at a young age. His brother had some health problems, and he believed that they were all related to what they ate. And so he got on this heavy focus on fresh pressed juice.
Okay.
So he would go to a fresh pressed juice bar in New York and thought that everybody in the world would like fresh squeezed, fresh pressed fruit and vegetable juice.
Yeah.
So he comes up with the design for this product called Juicero that will take fresh ingredients and create fresh juice. He actually raised over $100 million building up the company based on his love for fresh juice and his love for this product.
And his obvious passion for this, because he had a personal connection to it. So people bought into his passion,
yeah,
and everything, gave him money.
Yeah. It meant a lot to him. It was his family, right? So you can understand that. The challenge was when the product came on market at around $700 per unit, people said, yeah, I really don't need fresh juice that much. Or I'll just go and I'll buy fresh juice at Whole Foods or somewhere
right.
else. And so he didn't sell them. And the company flopped. They went bankrupt within a year. But kind of the moral of the story for any founder, any entrepreneur is we can't let ourselves fall in love with the idea. We can certainly be passionate about it, but we can't let that blind us
right.
to what does the customer really value? What will they pay for? And how do I address what either they need or what they want?
So talk about the other challenge I see all the time. In 15 years I've sat in this chair, heard lots of entrepreneurs come through, and a lot of VCs. In fact, we did a show about venture capital a number of years ago. And this surprised me. I thought raising money was just coming up with the sexy pitch, the elevator pitch. You know, here's the market, and here's the 10 times return, the 10x return you're going to get from product, solution, problem, answer. And that might get your attention. But what if the market doesn't see it like you do? What if they don't want juice as bad as you do? Can you pivot? Can you adapt? Or maybe they would like some other part of your model better. I like this muffin you're selling more than I like the juice you're pushing here, something. And talk about that. How do you, once you come up with this, here's my customer, here's my solution, here's my go-to-market, it doesn't work. The Apple story. How do you pivot? How do you adapt? How do you, or do you just go down in flames because you can't adapt? I'm going to stick with this come hell or high water here.
Well, you certainly can stick to it no matter what, and you do at your own peril. And so one of the most important things is being a change leader as an entrepreneur.
Right.
I speak about that in the book. Here's the reason. Think about it. Human beings are in perpetual motion. life is in perpetual motion. We live on a planet that's in perpetual motion.
Right.
Think about this, Paul. At the equator, planet Earth is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour.
Wow.
We're traversing the sun at 77,000 miles an hour.
No wonder I'm dizzy all the time. Yeah.
There is no reason that we should think business would be any different. Business is not static. It's always in motion. So those who learn agility, those who learn that as an entrepreneur, they need to be a change leader. And the reason I use change leader versus change management is I believe that change leadership means you're continually monitoring the environment, the people you serve. Remember, as an entrepreneur, we don't work for ourselves. We work for a customer. Even if we're in a B2B type of business, we work for a customer. So we've got to say, what's changing about them? What's new about them? What's different about them? What's new about the landscape, about the competition, about the pricing environment, the economic environment, so that we can continue to be agile? And a certain kiss of death is saying, we've got it. We're done.
Yeah.
We're going to stick with this from now on.
That's it.
Look at the history of companies that have done that. At one point, I believe it was somewhere around 1971 or so, Sears represented 1% of total GDP in the United States.
Wow. Sears, one company alone.
Now Sears, in the mall near where I live, is a bunch of restaurants.
Yeah.
They're only a footnote in history because they refused to see how the world was changing. They refused to acknowledge Kmart, Walmart, Costco.
Right.
And now who's still around?
Exactly. Well, that's what so many of these VCs told me, is that your idea, your inspiration attracts my interest. The pitch, the pitch deck, the potential, the size of the market, all those things that you've answered. But that doesn't open my wallet. My wallet is, I got to bet on the jockey as much as the horse. Can you adapt? And they said so much of that is adapting to what you don't know yet, what you don't see until you jump into the marketplace. You thought they're going to love this juice, and instead they didn't. So how are you going to adapt? What are you going to do different? What kind of different customer are you going to, how are you going to do it? And they said not many entrepreneurs can make that shift. They put so much into this. This is their baby, their inspiration. No, I'm going to just keep pushing through. That's the secret to success here. You're saying it's what I'm hearing from them too is agility. You got to adapt.
Absolutely.
Adapt or die.
One of the things I talk about in the book as it relates to your business plan and your strategy is you need a clear definition of success. What does success look like?
Yes.
That vision statement. But how you get there is always going to be an evolution. It's always going to be changing. It's like GPS. When I get in the car to go home, it could give me five different paths home. And in fact, it may change when I'm on the route and tell me, no, there's a better path. If you hold that vision, that definition of success in place, hold on loosely, but hold on to it, then you can adapt the go-to-market model. You can adapt elements of your strategy. You can refine your value proposition so that you're continually editing the way you show up to your customers, but still adding value. And so that gets to one of the principles I talk about, which is relevance. For any organization, you must earn and continually re-earn relevance because things are always changing. Relevance meaning pertinence, importance. How much do you matter to your customer? Will they care if you're there or will they not?
But we're always chasing the funding first. It seems to be so, we're in the building at UCI's Applied Innovation Center. Most of people got a startling idea. All they do all day long is chase the money.
Yeah.
Because they think if, with an idea and money, I can do anything. And they haven't even taken it to, they haven't really even approached a customer, a couple people, but they haven't really established a relevance. They haven't maybe even identified a market and really figured out a way to deal with it. As you say, they fall in love with the idea, not the customer here.
Yeah, I think if you can change the paradigm in your own thinking and start there and say, who do I work for? What do they value? How do I deliver it? When you're really clear about that, I think it makes it so much easier to get funding versus the other way around with a half-baked idea or something that you haven't really proven. And then seeking the money. I don't want anybody to end up like Juicero.
Yeah. Well, there's an awful lot of them in this building and other places who say, what happened to those guys? Great idea. But they disappeared because they either couldn't adapt or they found out when they got in there it wasn't what they thought it was. The people wanted something else and they were offering. They either couldn't adapt or wouldn't adapt.
Yeah.
Or they didn't have a clear plan. They just kept burning through money as they tried one thing after another, and eventually the money went, gave out here. So who's this book for? Is it for little guys, big guys, successful guys that are stuck somehow? Who should pick up The Entrepreneur's Journey?
So I wrote it for people that are starting the company, they're scaling it, or they're stuck. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it makes a difference if it's a small company, a mid-sized company, a larger company. My experience is I've been an entrepreneur within a large corporation. Most of my corporate world experience was in turnaround, so divisions, departments, parts of companies. And I think the principles apply there as well. If you're following these fundamental principles that are described in the book, I think they can apply to any kind of business. I wanted to focus it on the entrepreneurial journey because small business is the essence of all business. There is no big business that didn't start out small.
Yeah, right.
And so if you can really work on these fundamentals, they will carry you through every stage of a company.
Well, it's something that we've all heard about. We've all talked about The Entrepreneur's Journey, but I don't know if I've ever read about it. I don't know that I've ever really thought about it as a it just seems to be kind of the typical story as they tell here every week, and as I read every week, it's almost like an accidental sequence of events. I found something, I discovered something, I tried something, and they just make it seem like it all by accident, poof, it just turned into a unicorn and $1 billion business here.
Fascinating concept. Not reality, but it makes for great movies.
It does, right? It's The Founding of Facebook, or what was that movie? All of these. One happenstance, one lucky break after another, and it was the right person at the right moment and the right product at the right time, and presto, suddenly it just appears, and just like that, it's a big success here. Well, I wish you nothing but success for this book. I had the privilege to know you now for a while in your role at the Chamber, and you always seem to be engaged, you always seem to be innovative, you're always thoughtful. You don't come across as somebody who sort of immediately jumps and tells people how to do something. So for you to chronicle this entrepreneur's journey, I suspect it's not just your take and your ideas, but it's based on experience and research and listening to others here.
All the above.
I think that's the success, going to be the success of this book for you. How do we find it? Where do we get it?
Amazon. Just go to Amazon and look for The Entrepreneur's Journey, How to Make Your Business Work for You.
Okay.
And it's there.
Is there a website coming? Is there anything else? You're going to be giving talks on this? Is this going to
I'm
turn...
giving talks. I'm doing podcasts. I'm taking the show on the road
there
wherever I can. So, but the best place to get it is just go to Amazon. It's also available on my company's website. It's the Strategic Advisory Consulting Group website, sacgusa.com.
Okay. Well, David, I know you as Dave, but the book says David Cofaro, C-O-F-F-A-R-O. Did I get that right?
You did. I put David on there for my mother.
Well, she'll be very happy to hear that. All right. Well, go check it out. And if you haven't joined, how do they join the Chamber if they want to get into the Chamber here? Is it just an Irvine business? No.
About a quarter of a third of our businesses are outside of the city of Irvine. So just go to irvinechamber.com. All the information is there. We've got all kinds of events and activities for all different
you
kinds
really
of businesses.
You really do. Most chambers have a few ribbon cuttings and some networking things. And those have some value to it. But you guys seem to do lots of educational stuff and work with all sorts of different trade. I've been to events where you had people from the SBA or from the Commerce Department and other sorts of things. Yeah,
lots of fun. Please join us for an event coming up soon.
Okay. Well, all that and more is why we brought you in here today. Thanks for joining us on this edition of OC Spotlight. As we said, there's a lot of people out there. There's some incredible people doing some amazing things. We try to find them and bring them to your attention here on Orange County's only community radio station, OC Talk Radio, streaming live from our studios here at the University of California Irvine's Beale Applied Innovation Center.